forward as we get through the pandemic. Its goal is really a short-term one for 6 to 18 months, and it has two main parts. One is business recovery, and the other is humanitarian recovery, community, basically.
So there are definitely two different areas of our community that needs to get back on its feet. How did you go about, gathering the information to assemble the plan?
So the plan is ground up. We took 5 steps, and we wanted to make sure that it was a joint city-community collaborative effort. And so we began with 20 roundtables with a variety of organizations, some organizations that exist and some that we created. For example, we did all of the business groups you could think of, the chamber, the lodging, et cetera. But then we didn't have an organization per se on housing, so we created a roundtable on housing. We didn't have one on poverty, so we created one. So in total, it was 20 roundtables with 300 people. And then we followed each roundtable up with a survey. So in the end, we got about 300 surveys to find out what people felt were the most important things, so we could have qualitative and quantitative feedback. Then we gathered data from organizations and from the chamber to find out what really could we actually quantify the need, both on the business and humanitarian side. We took all of that information and we created a COVID recovery task force of 11 people that were all community members and 2 people from local government. And together we worked through all of that information to create the plan. Then we took the plan once it was drafted and sent it back to the community to make sure it reflected accurately what they needed. This was all done in 7 weeks. So it was actually an excellent process.
So how was it determined to reach out to 200, to assemble and determine who would be the 250 community people that you would originally go to for these surveys?
So we did a series of roundtables, like I said, with groups that we thought would be helpful and informative, and we wanted to make sure they spanned a wide variety. So we did, like I said, the obvious ones were the Chamber, the Lodging Association, the business. We did one with health and human services organizations. We did one with theaters. We did one with a Facebook group called Mom and Pops, which is a group of small businesses led by Paul Menta. We did Reimagining Key West. We wanted as much diversity in the roundtables as we could get. We did one with Key West educators, which was extremely insightful, general nonprofit, and there were 20 in total. So it was just to be diverse and inclusive.
Well, you came up with, as an example, 2 definite categories. One, the challenges that businesses are facing. And, of course, with the stress and the economic reduction, we're also coming up with the challenges of the community and the humanitarian challenges that we are facing. Can you go through, an example, what were the key points from the business side?
So the business side, we had four big things that came up. And so the number one thing, as you probably will not surprise you, was lack of business. And 27% agreed that was the top issue, of course, right? Number two related to that is labor shortage. We're losing people. Were we going to lose more? In Irma, we lost 1,500. Estimates now are that we might lose up to 3,000, especially when the moratorium on evictions is lifted. Then there was commercial rent. And the fourth one, which was a big one, was actually marketing. The businesses, most of the roundtables, businesses felt that we, you know, the TDC was not doing enough marketing of Key West. And actually, I have to just tell you guys, that was an inaccurate perception, which led us to one of the points in the plan, which is closing the information gap between the TDC and businesses. Because when we went back to the TDC to say, why aren't you marketing? They said, what do you mean? We are. And they showed us some really great ads. Those were the 4 things on the business. And on the humanitarian, it was exactly probably what you would expect, except for one surprise: housing, health and safety. And then the one that surprised me anyway was food security. That literally we had people not going, we had children in our community who weren't getting enough food.
And we talk about the food and the food banks, because the demand for food banks and for this has gone up specifically because of this, has it not?
It actually doubled. So, for example, SOS was giving out 6,000 bags of food per month before COVID, and now it's 13,000 a month.
It really has developed a large demand for it, and of course the community is responding. As you mentioned, SOS is the largest, and we've had them on the air, and they've talked about it. But the community is stepping up, and so are businesses. So right now, the people that did appear that need food in the Florida Keys is getting it. We give the hats off in that area. We have this plan that you've developed now. Do you think it's going to be able to be implemented and see any immediate change with regard to these areas, both in business and humanitarian side?
We already have, actually. So there are 17 points in the plan. And on the business side, 4 or 5 of them are done. And the rest of them are in progress. And on the humanitarian side, I would say the 3 big ones are. And so, yes, I do think we're going to see change. I mean, nothing's going to be the bullet here. The idea was never to fix it. The idea was to help us move through it quicker.
Well, you know, so much has to do with perception. And, of course, we now have visitors that are coming back to Key West. And when you look and walk down Duval Street, there's so many empty storefronts. Tell us about one of the unique features that's come up with regards to, I guess, improving the perception of Key West and its recovery on Duval Street.
Okay, well, there's a couple of them that relate to this plan. But the most obvious to the storefronts would be something called Operation Storefront, which many cities have done, where you basically try and get some art into the windows of our empty storefronts so that it looks more beautiful, hopefully, especially for the holiday season, where it looks like we're going to get a lot of visitors and we want our streets to look inviting and beautiful. So we have contacted landlords and said, basically, could we put some art in there? And we've actually got people in the community who are donating some money to help us get those windows looking pretty. That's kind of a low-hanging fruit. The one that we really want to talk about is, how do we actually get more business? How do we actually support businesses so that they can really, get back into those stores and do well? And, of course, some of that will be fixed by the increase in tourism. But in the plan, a couple of other things that impact that were rolling back commercial property taxes, which has been done. Invigorating Sunset Festival. Why does that help Duval Street? Well, the city reduced rents for the performers and artisans and also gave them some free parking spaces in the evenings when they're performing and selling their things, because there was only 4 people out there. And when we can invigorate Sunset Festival, what do people do after it? They tend to go downtown. They go shopping. They go to our bars. They have a drink. They go eat in our restaurants. So that seems like a good way to get some more business moving there on Duval Street.